Parshat Balak is a famous story how Balak pays and hires Bilam, the famous sorcerer, to go and curse the Jews. And instead of cursing the Jews, Bilam pronounces the most wonderful blessings upon the Jewish people. I'd like to try to focus, Virat Hashem, today on one basic question in looking at the personality of Bilam. We know that from the start, God is very reluctant to allow Bilam to go on this mission. At the beginning, he tells Bilam, whatever you try to do, you're not going to be successful. The people are a blessed people. You'll be unable to curse them. And although God allows Bilam eventually to go, he only allows him to go based on the conditions that God is establishing. Bilam nevertheless goes with his own mindset. As we find that over and over again, Bilam is stopped by direct signs from God that this is not something pleasing. You have the donkey stopped 3 times along the way. You have the angel of God, which appears to Bilam. The donkey first talking to Bilam, then the angel of God appearing to Bilam. And Bilam understands quite clearly that this is something that God does not want him to do. He tries to bless the people and instead curses the people. Nonetheless, he continues over and over again to try to be successful. As Rabbi Miller asked, surely any rational man would have reacted in the obvious way and turned back. Why court disaster? Yet even when he had been forced twice to bless Israel, and Balak implored him neither curse them nor bless them, he tried vainly once again to elicit a curse. What were his motives in the whole episode? And this is the key question we need to understand. And looking at this story, is what is the mindset of Bilam? How did Bilam think it was possible to go and curse the Jews when God over and over again is telling him he won't be successful? Why did Bilam press it anyway? Why did Bilam insist on going? Why did Bilam insist on taking this difficult path, the path he knew would be unsuccessful? Why did he continue on this way? Why did he not react as any rational person would have reacted and turned back? It's this question I'd like to try to understand on 2 different levels, clearly with implications and directives as Bilam being a model for us in our own lives as well. I think that perhaps the most famous aspect of Bilam, which will be the focus of our discussion today, is the famous Mishnah, the 5th chapter of Ethics of Our Fathers of Pirkei Avos, which states, whoever has the following 3 traits is a disciple of our forefather Abraham, and whoever has 3 different traits is a disciple of the wicked Bilam. Those who have a good eye, a humble spirit, and a meek soul are among the disciples of our forefather Abraham. Those who have an evil eye, an arrogant spirit, and a greedy soul are among the disciples of the wicked Bilam. And it's this aspect of the evil eye, the Ayin Ra, that I'd like to try to look at, albeit not on the level of Pshat, but I'd like to try to look at this idea based on an evil eye in respect to an arrogant spirit on the first level, and on the second level, the evil eye based on the concept of one who is greedy. And these 2 aspects, I think, will form the paradigm and the prototype of what Bilam is all about. The Lekut Sichos Musar Slobodka Rosh Yeshiva notes in his essay on level number 1 about Bilam a very beautiful insight of the Gra and Aderet Eliyahu. The Gra writes that there were 10 trials that Bilam HaRasha was tested, and in all of them he was not successful, to parallel the 10 trials that Avraham Avinu withstood in all of these. And we've seen, whether it's the Mishnah or in other places, that there are a lot of comparisons that are drawn between Abraham and Bilam. And this is a fascinating one, the 10 trials of both. What's the key difference between them? And this is so beautiful. So explains the Lekut Sichos Musar the following. The trials of Abraham, Kisham hayu kol hanisyonot ligrom lo mafri'im ubilbulim bavodas Hashem. All the trials of Avraham Avinu were to try to create a certain barrier for him to serve God, to create perhaps a certain dissension in his relationship with God. For example, here God promised him a child, and now he's telling him to sacrifice the child. God promised him the land, and now there's a famine in the land. All of these are meant for him to question God. But Avraham Avinu is unimpressed, and he nevertheless carries on without thinking twice and clinging and cleaving to God and his relationship with God, b'tmimus, with complete wholeness. V'ilu b'Bil'am. But however, on the other side, Bil'am, hayu ha'nisyonot la'afriyo min ha'shamayim. All the trials of Bil'am were in order to stop him from heaven, k'dei sh'lo yelech k'neged ritzon Hashem, in order that he should not leave God. Well, Avraham Avinu was to see if he would challenge God. The tests of Bil'am were in order to bring him closer to God. V'ramzulo v'gilulo dat elyon. And it was trying to hint to him what the will of God is. V'hu itgaber al nisyonot tav elu v'chizek et atzmo bat mal'ot shono k'dei lotzi l'fo'al ritzono k'neged ritzon HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And what does Bil'am do? He creates all these excuses, all these pretenses, in order to go against God. And this is perhaps the key difference. Avraham Avinu clings, no matter what, to God when God is testing him by pushing him away. But with Bil'am, God is trying to bring him closer and closer to the will of God, and Bil'am tries as hard as possible to push himself farther and farther away from God and to really go against the will of God. And we know, as the Lekat Sichos Musar points out, these 10 trials are the 10 times that Bil'am is told by God not to go. Whether it's originally in the story, and 3 times by the donkey and the angel, and the times he tries to bless and is unsuccessful, these are all God's way of saying, connect to me, come close to me. And Bil'am refuses to listen and thereby fails the test over and over again. So again, the question is raised, and it's our question. Ketzad yitachen shadam omed keneged kol hagilulim shel morat ruach mimarom meiz panim lamshich bedarko. How is it possible that someone has so many revelations that clearly tell him to go in a certain path and he refuses to listen? So the answer Lekat Sichos Musar gives, and this is approach number one, is he says there's a famous Mishnah in Pirkei Avos of Havei mechashev schar mitzvah keneged hefseda. A person should reckon the loss that a mitzvah entails against its reward, and the benefit derived from aveira, sin, against the loss it brings. Although we'll develop this in a moment on a personal level, on the second level, says the Lekat Sichos Musar, when a person has an aveira in front of them, they have to see what are the momentary benefits that a person gains versus the value of doing this aveira. Now, for most of us, the momentary benefits are the personal pleasures that we get. He says, for somebody on the level of Bil'am, what was the personal pleasures? And this is the fascinating part. It was the ability to come close to God. Bil'am was impressed. This is that ruach gvoha, this is that lofty spirit, that arrogant spirit. He was impressed on how involved God was in trying to stop him from doing the will of God. How the donkey opened his mouth, how the angel standing in front of him, how God himself speaks to him. All of these revelations, it's a weird way of thinking, but all of these revelations brought pleasure to Bil'am. Here he's getting all of this attention, and this negative attention that he's getting for him is the greatest amount of pleasure that he's willing to forgo doing the will of God in order to focus in on this momentary pleasure. This is the insatiable spirit of Bil'am. This is the Bil'am who's all he's concerned about is, look how they're treating me from heaven. Look how much attention I'm getting. That momentary negative attention is what he focuses in on. And that for him is more important than doing the will of God. Compare this, for example, says the Lekat Sichos Musar, to Avraham Avinu, and you see the contrast in such a stark way, where at the famous story Vayera Elav Hashem Beelonei Mamre, that God appears to Avraham in the plains of Mamre, to visit him, to merape cholim, because he's just had a bris milah. And then you have these three angels, and as Rashi explains, Avinu turns to God and says, God, please just wait a couple of minutes. I have to go greet the angels. Avinu steps away from this relationship, steps away from this closeness of God, when he had a lot of other people in his household who could have taken care of these strangers, that he himself is involved in this mitzvah. That for him, doing the will of God is greater than having that closeness, that momentary closeness with God. This is the contrast between a Bilam and an Avram Avinu. It's this contrast that says the Leket Sichos Musar tells us that Bilam's whole concern was really for himself and not for God. And he notes that if it's really for God, and that Bilam was really interested in closeness for God, for God's sake, and not for his own sake, that after Bilam witnessed so many miracles and so many revelations, how God really wants him to go bless the people, he should have taken the attitude, followed in the footsteps of Yisro, and gone and convert, and be able to experience the Shekhinah, the Divine Presence, at all times. It was clear that his intention was not to be able to serve God as much as to serve himself, and just to try to make himself larger and greater than he really was. And it's almost ironic that, as the Sichos Musar points out, as well as others, that Rashi tells us that the donkey rebuked Bilam died immediately afterwards. So that people would not point to the donkey and exclaim, this is the donkey that rebuked Bilam and left him speechless. The humiliation of Bilam by the donkey remaining alive would not have been in keeping with the dictates of Kavod HaBriyos, human dignity. But says the Sichos Musar, consider the Kiddush Hashem, the sanctification of God's name, which would have ensued had the donkey remained alive. People everywhere would have pointed out the donkey as testimony to the wonders of God. Indeed, this wondrous donkey was created during the twilight of the sixth day of creation. Yet not to embarrass a man, although of such a low character, the donkey was not allowed to remain alive. We see here how God himself, kivyachol, is not so much interested in his own honor, but the honor of others, to be able to look outside of self. That's what Bilam didn't have. Bilam was only concerned about himself. Kadosh Baruch Hu, by killing the donkey, is saying that even he is not concerned, kivyachol, with his own honor as much as the honor of somebody else. It's the model of Avraham Avinu, who's willing to forgo that close relationship in order to invite in these three guests. This is the difference between Bilam and Avraham Avinu. I think this is the explanation of the ayin ra'ah, of this evil eye, on one level, that Bilam possessed. We know that Bilam himself describes himself as Ne'um HaGever Shetum HaAyin. And Rashi explains, what is Shetum HaAyin? And he brings two interpretations. The first is that he had no eye, that it was like an empty hole in his eye. And the second interpretation is of Unklus as open-eyed. But even Unklus, who explains it as open-eyed, it says Shetum HaAyin, one eye, not a Nayim, that only one eye was open. We learn from here that he was blind in the other one of his eyes. Bilam is described by the Torah as being blind in one eye. However you want to understand it, first interpretation or Unklus interpretation, the same upshot is that he only was able to see in one eye. What does this mean on a conceptual level? That Bilam was only able to focus in on himself. He had one eye for himself, but he was unable to focus in on others. As Rabbi Bunim points out in Ethics from Sinai, that a truly Abraham's characteristic of a good eye, we know, denotes a generous sense of benevolence, a wish to let and help others live, a joy at finding or making the world a bit happier. And indeed, we know, our sages stated, if the bride has beautiful eyes, you don't have to look further. And the Klei Yikra explains this cannot be meant literally, since it flies in the face of reality. There are plenty of ugly brides with beautiful eyes. What is more, how could the sages call for an examination of external beauty? Surely false is charm and vain beauty. A God-fearing woman, she is to be praised. But what they obviously meant was that one should look for good deeds to test if she has a beautiful eye, which means a generous and kindly disposition and kind heart. For if she looked at people with a kindly and unjoindous eye, then she would undoubtedly be endowed with all the other sterling moral qualities. And that's what the Kleiarcher is saying, that this was the test that Eliezer was looking for in Rivka. This, my friends, is level number one of Bilam. How could Bilam have gone when he knew so clearly that this is not the will of God? Bilam is going because he recognized that although this was not the will of God, he was getting tremendous amount of attention. And a person who has an arrogant spirit is only interested right now in that negative attention and not in the larger picture of what is the will of God. Bilam represents a person with one eye. Bilam represents a person whose only focus is on himself. What spiritual gains can he gain from any situation? That's what Bilam is interested in. That's the focus of Bilam's life. And I think this is a model that's so important for our lives. That some people get so caught up in themselves that they can't see beyond themselves to others. The model of Bilam vis-a-vis the model of Avraham Avinu is that even when we get caught up in piety and in we think that this is for religious purposes, do we sometimes get so caught up in self that we're really doing it for self and we forget about what ultimately is for God and what ultimately is going to be for sensitivity for other people? Brings to mind a famous story that Rabbi Fran tells about an individual who was married for a number of years without children. And he was told to go to a certain rabbi in Bnei Brak. And he went to this rabbi, and the rabbi said that he should come to his shul on Rosh Hashanah, and he would be given the master of Chana. And there was a skula, there was a special aspect. If you get that Haftorah in his shul, so then a person would be blessed with a child that year. So the man leaves his wife for Rosh Hashanah, goes to Bnei Brak, and clearly he doesn't fit in with the milieu of the people. So after davening, whatever, is milling around, wishing people a good year, he's standing in the back, you know, clearly a little bit out of place. And there's another young man standing there clearly out of place. And the two of them engage in conversation. And the first man says to the second, you know, Gujantif, what are you doing here? Second man says, you know, I heard that if you get the aliyah of Maftir for Chana in this shul, so you're blessed with a child during this year, so I've come to the shul to get this blessing. So the first man, although he was promised by the Rav of that shul that he would get the Maftir of Chana, he didn't want that second person to come to shul the next day and be embarrassed by not getting that aliyah. So he decided that he was going to daven in another shul, even though his whole purpose of coming to Bnei Brak was just to get this aliyah. He didn't want to do it in order to embarrass this person, and he quietly went to another shul the next day. Rabbi Franz ends the story by saying that this individual went to another shul, was blessed with a child that year. He says, I don't know if the guy who got the aliyah was blessed with a child, but this sensitivity that he expressed was worthy for him to be the recipient of God's blessing that year. This is what we're speaking about, a person who has two eyes. A person with one eye just says, I was promised this aliyah. We've been waiting for years for a child. This is mine. I'm going to take it. This other guy's coming on my turf. A person with two eyes has the ability to say, let me be sensitive to this other person. Let me not stand on my own ceremony. This is the quality of a Ben Avraham, a person who has the qualities of Avraham Avinu in contradistinction to the qualities of Bilam. A person who's just high on themselves and just involved in spiritual gains for oneself is the one-eyed Bilam. The ability to see outward and to be sensitive to others is the quality of Avraham Avinu. That's level number one. Level number two is the insight Rabbi Miller brings in Shabbat Shirim, where he states, to reach an answer, let us refer to the theme of Chaim of Volozhin, elaborated by Rabbi Dessler. The theme is a change wrought by Adam's sin in eating of the tree of good, of knowledge of good and evil. Or as Rabbi Chaim interprets it, the tree of joining of good and evil. For that, he writes, has the meaning of association. Before this, good and evil were distinct and separate, but subsequently throughout the world they became intermingled. And everything is a mixture of the positive and the negative. A The Rambam puts it, before the sin, the conceptions of good and evil did not exist, but only the conceptions of truth and falsehood. In consequence of the sin, the clear-cut distinction between truth and falsehood became blurred, and man's choice then lay between a relative good and a relative evil. As a result, explains Rabbi Dessler, there's come into existence a sense of proportion, the faculty of weighing one factor of a situation against another. Despair, for instance, arises when negative factors of a situation seem to outweigh positive ones, and optimism when the reverse is the case. In fact, in the same situation, one man might be optimistic while another is in despair. And the reason is that one of them, or both, are lacking the sense of proportion and do not know how to balance correctly the various elements of the situation. And we, my friends, know this to be so true in our lives, that in any given situation, you can have different individuals experiencing the situation, viewing the situation, and they're all going to analyze the situation differently. Some will be overly optimistic, some overly pessimistic. You don't have a true sense of really what is the situation is all about. And the reason for that is we have a distorted mindset as a result of the sin of eating of the good and evil. It's become this mixture of good and evil within us that we can't clearly see the proportions and the balance. And that's a challenge that we face in every action of our lives, in every assessment of a situation. We don't have that clarity of vision. Rabbi Miller continues, the enjoyment of flattery, too, stems from a lack of proportion, which reduces the ability to discern how much is meant and how much is not. Because the words are pleasant to the ear of the hearer, he makes believe they are all genuine compliments. He takes the external part to heart rather like the child playing with her doll. The superficial likeness helps her to pretend that the doll is a living child. Bilam suffered to an extreme degree from such a lack of proportion. Where he himself was not concerned, he could give objective and balanced advice. But where the desire for prestige and flattery, for silver and gold, was paramount, he lost all ability to weigh the situation rationally. The glitter of Balak's gold, perhaps too his ingrained hatred of Israel, proved stronger than the voice of reason, the voice of the donkey, the voice of God's angel, and he proceeded impervious to their reproof. He dwelt on the single details of a situation which were pleasing to him and ignored the rest. Here, Rabbi Miller is explaining on the second level, how could Bilam have gone when he clearly saw this was not the will of God? And the answer is the end part of the Mishnah. The answer is a person who has a greedy soul only sees in front of them what they want to see. Bilam lost all proportion in this situation. All he saw on it was the single details of Balak's gold, of his hatred for Israel. He wasn't able, because he was so fixated in the situation, he wasn't able to step out and be able to analyze it clearly. And Rabbi Miller ends this essay by saying that our sages say that the man's sin is always the result of a lack of perspective. The Gemara in Bava Batra states, come and let us reckon the reckoning of the world, the loss of a mitzvah against its gain, and the gain of a sin against its loss. This is the key in any relationship we have with God, is the ability to make this cheshbon, is the ability to make this accounting. If we're able to analyze this aspect of this Gemara, this is really the key in our Avodas Hashem. This idea that we have seen in the past, but need to really focus in on over and over again, as to really be able to take the lesson from Bilam of being able to have two eyes. The Shetum Ha'ayin, the negative eye of Bilam on this level, the evil eye, is only being able to perceive a situation from one aspect. But we need to have the abilities to introspect with two eyes to see every aspect. And Rabbi Bunim develops this mission on two levels. Let's speak about the end of the Mishnah, being able to reckon the mitzvah against its gain, the gain against its loss, and then the beginning, come and let us reckon the reckoning of the world. And he says, Rabbi Bunim, that the first obstacle that the evil inclination throws in the path of a person on his way to perform a mitzvah is the thought of what it has to cost. Think of the time, the effort, the money, how could you? Rabbi Yehuda Anasi's answer is, we cannot deny that observing mitzvot does involve an initial cost, but weigh this against the gain beyond price, the infinite reward that will surely come. When tempted by transgression, on the other hand, you have initial gain. This too cannot be denied. There's an immediate pleasure. True, says Rabbi Yehuda, nothing tempts you. It offers you some immediate benefit, some ready profit. But weigh the momentary gain against the infinite loss, the irreparable harm that it brings. And to control the Yetzirah, the evil inclination, this is the key. Make a cheshbon, a reckoning of what you gain and what you lose by everything. Because in any system of accounting, what is important is the final figure in the last column. Of what avail is it to show a profit in the beginning, but to have a deficit in red ink at the end? A series of pleasures is a perishing series. Good times have nothing in the wake except a feeling of emptiness. The experience of many pleasures amounts to nothing of permanent value. Transgressions end with loss that spells a true significance. That's why a person in life has to weigh, and it's so important to make this cheshbon, to make this calculation. What am I gaining? What am I losing? I speak Lashon Hara, so I gain a momentary pleasure, but what am I losing? And this cheshbon, this calculation has to be done in order for a person to really have a sense of whether they are going on the right path or not. Which leads us to our understanding of the beginning of this expression. Bo v'nachshov cheshbono shel olam. And Rabbi Putnam notes, note the term reckoning of the world. You might think the sages were referring to international affairs, the state of the world economy, or the balance of power. He says, in a very deep sense, it is the reckoning of the world. Because as he says, do not consider trivial and significant this private accounting in a personal world. The tensions of nuclear threats may leave your world untouched. But in the far-reaching vision of our sages, your virtuous deed or your foul misdeed may profoundly affect this whole world of ours. Since an individual is judged according to the majority of his deeds, and the world is judged according to the majority of its deeds, a man should ever regard himself in the world as half virtuous, pure, and innocent, and half guilty. Therefore, if one does one mitzvah, how blessed is he that he has made virtue, innocence, prevail in the scales of justice for himself and for the entire world. And this is what we spoke about in Shavuos time, that we have to look beyond the here and now, but to be able to understand that each and every one of the mitzvahs that we do have a cosmic effect, have an effect on the rest of Klal Yisrael. And he notes the succinct words of the Zohar, ever should a man see himself as if the fate of the entire world depends on him, your deed can be the deciding vote. And this idea that everything we do has ramifications, has this ability to change the balance sheet, is also very, very important in terms of an individual's own life. As Rabbi Kurzer notes in the Art of Jewish Prayer, that when a person dies, his or her soul goes to a place known as the world of souls. They are freed from the body, it grows to the extent that the person developed it during his or her lifetime. It develops according to how much Torah was learned, how many commandments of the Torah were observed while it was in the body. And he speaks about the resurrection, speaks to the exact precision of God's reward to people. Nothing in spiritual creation is ever destroyed. Whatever we create spiritually during our physical sojourn on earth is brought back to us to the exact extent that we developed it while alive. Every single mitzvah that we do has tremendous implications for who we are and how we develop lenetzach for eternity. So the obvious question becomes, if this is so, and we understand how important this cheshbon, how important this calculation is, how come we don't do better off in life? How come we make so many mistakes? How come we're not successful in doing this balance sheet and trying to lead better and more careful lives? So perhaps the answer is found in a beautiful insight of Rav Chaim Shmulevitz and Sichos Musar. The insight is found on that war between Yaakov and the angel. And after Yaakov is victorious, he turns to the angel and says, what's your name? And the name we know means the essence. And the angel's reply is, why do you ask for my name? And Rav Chaim Shmulevitz explains this reply on a much deeper level. The angel of Esav was not posing a question, why do you ask for my name? But rather giving a reply. My strength lies, we know Esav represents the Sarah Shal Esav, the epitome of evil. My strength lies in the fact that people do not pause to examine me more closely, to know my name, my essence. For if they would, it would dispel the illusion that I present. Rav Chaim Shulevitz is teaching us here is a very fundamental idea, that the reason perhaps why we're so unsuccessful is we don't stop to make this cheshbon. We don't stop to make this accounting. And because we go through our lives so quickly and fast forward almost, and we don't pause and make this balance book before we do everything, it's initial gain, it's long-term gain, it's initial success. Because we don't do all these, we therefore are not so successful in life and being able to be a little bit more careful in our observance of mitzvot and being careful not to transgress any averus. This, I think, is the model in which are found many confusing and interlacing paths, all similar to one another, and the purpose of the whole being is to challenge one to reach a portico in their midst. Some of the paths are straight ones, which lead directly to the portico, but some cause one to stray and to wander from it. And the walker between the paths has no way of seeing or knowing whether he's on the true or false path, for they're all similar. And this is really what life is about, that we walk around with the inability to discriminate what is the right path to reach the portico. And the Ramchal continues in the special and says, but one who is standing from a commanding position in the portico, who sees all the paths, can tell you clearly, walk down this path and don't take this path. This is the path to take. And then in the Nimshal, in the explanation of this, says the Ramchal, likewise, those who are walking through life should listen to the sagest advice of those who've reached the portico. And what's this great advice that they give us? And the advice that they give us is, come, let us enter into accounting. Let us come and compute the world's account. The Lekach Tov brings down the Sefer Hagyonei Musar and asks the obvious question. Hold on a second. The Mashal and the Nimshal are not parallel in the Ramchal's writing. In the Mashal, we have an individual who's lost in this maze, and the guy standing in the middle says, take this path and you'll be successful. In the Nimshal, in the explanation of the parable, what's the explanation? The explanation is, go and do a computing of the Cheshbono Shel Olam. If you do a computation, if you think things through, so then you'll be able to reach the center. Would I have not have anticipated that the response that I would have gotten to parallel the story would be that the people in the middle should say, do this mitzvah, or do this A, B, and C in order to do a Avodas Hashem. Telling a person to make an accountant, telling a person to think through what they're doing, that's the response of how to get to the middle. Tell me something concrete, what to do. So explains Hagyonei Musar the following, and he says that's the key. The chiddush of the Ramchal is a great chiddush, is that nobody can tell you how to reach the center. Every individual, as the Gra points out, just like every individual's mind is different, every individual approaches the world and their service of God differently. There is no one straight path to that center of the maze, to the portico. Every person is going to have to create their own path. Every person, based on their individuality, is going to have to create their own way to reach the center of this maze. But the only way to do that is to make an accounting, is to be alert enough, to be sensitive enough to what are the different options in front of me. And if you're able to be at least attentive to that, so then you'll be successful in reaching the center. And this is perhaps the model, as the Bali Musar and again the Yaakov Lekach Tov point out in the Kovas HaMincha, the model of Bilam's donkey, where Bilam's donkey first stops on a road which has room to the right and to the left. And then it stops along a path which has a fence on either side, and it pushes Bilam against its leg against the wall. And then the third place, the angel stops him in a narrow place, and the donkey has nowhere to go but crouches down right where he is. And it says this is the model of the Yetzer Hara. At first we have room to do tshuva, we have room to move back and forth. And then the Yetzer Hara gets us in a much more precarious situation. until finally it locks us in and we have the inability to get out. A person who's sensitive to this is sensitive to the processes that's happening and will wake up before it's too late. Will wake up before the donkey's in that position of crouching. It's the model of the Mashal Kivshat Harash that Natan gives to David, where that famous statement of the parable, he says that a guest came to the rich man. He was too miserly to take any of his own sheep or cattle to prepare for the guest who had come to him. Instead, he took the poor man's lamb and prepared it for the man who had come to him. And as the Mefarshim points out, there are two different Hebrew words that are used for guest. According to the sages, the first helech denotes a casual passerby. So it is with evil inclination. First it appears as a casual passerby, but once it's welcome, it becomes a permanent house guest. The second term, and then finally the third term, is ish, it becomes the master of the house. This is the Yetzirah. First it's a helech. It walks, a casual passerby. Then it comes into your house, it's an oreach, and makes certain demands. And then it becomes an ish, it becomes the master of your house. What's the way to stop this? It's that ability to introspect. It's the ability to have two eyes. Bilam is the paradigm of one eye, who's just looking for personal pleasure, the greedy soul. The model of life is the model of two eyes. To be able to see and examine what are the different avenues available down that road, to be able to weigh the good and the evil, to be able to weigh what are the momentary benefits, what are the long-term benefits. This is the model of how you're going to be successful in life. And this is indeed how the Manchester Rav knows inspiration, insight. He says in his commentary, Rabbeinu Yonah questions the lengthy wording of this Mishnah. It would seem that the author could have said simply, whoever has a good eye is a disciple of Abraham, whoever has a bad eye is a disciple of the wicked Bilam. Instead, the Mishnah begins, whoever has the following three traits is a disciple of forefather Abraham, whoever has the following three traits is a disciple of the wicked Bilam, and then it lists those traits. He says we may suggest that this Mishnah's opening sentence is conveying the constant need for responsiveness reflection, for that is the key to attaining Abraham's traits. The Mishnah is in effect saying to us, decide for yourself which path you wish to follow, that of Abraham or that of Bilam. The road to becoming a disciple of Abraham requires reflection. In contrast to the way of Bilam, who gave no thought to satisfying the divine will. Once a person realizes the necessity for such hisponimus, he can then learn the various attributes he must acquire to be counted among Abraham's disciples. Life is about hisponimus. Life is about introspection. Life is about understanding there are two paths in front of you. Would you like to be a disciple of Abraham? Would you like to be a disciple of Bilam? That's the question we need to ask ourselves. And therefore, in summation, the original question we asked ourselves, what possessed Bilam to go even though he knew that this was not the will of God? Answer number one, the arrogant spirit. Answer number one is that Bilam was just into how he could gratify his own soul. And since he was into how he could gratify his own soul, all he was interested in is those momentary experiences of having God so close to him without seeing the larger picture. It's the one-eyed Bilam who's only interested in self and not interested in others. On the second level, Bilam was just interested in that greedy soul, in the money that was involved. He didn't see beyond that. And this is a lesson for our own lives, that the only way we need to be successful is again to move away from the one-eyed Bilam to the introspection of the two eyes, of being able to look at the garden path of the maze of life to be able to reach the portico, being able to see the steps of Bilam's donkey to recognize we're falling into the trap of sin, the concept of hisponimus, the concept of introspection. And if we have that ability to focus ourselves on being able to weigh a situation, on being able to see a larger picture, so then we'll be able to be more successful in looking beyond ourselves, beyond our own needs, and be able to be open up to the needs of others. And then truly we'll be the disciples of Abraham, as the Mishnah describes it, one who has a good eye, a humble spirit, and a meek soul.